Greetings, everyone, and welcome to our World Peace Diet Circle on April 20th, 2017. Wow, years go by. And thank you all so much for joining us. That's really heart-touching to know that we're committed enough to make time out of our busy schedules. I know we're all got 1,000 things we could be doing, so I really appreciate your being here so that we can discuss and not only the issues and the ideas underlying the World Peace Diet and vegan living in this century and going forward, so that we can help heal the terrible wounding that our society not only inflicts on little kids growing up here, but on animals, and really on all of us and on the earth, and to get to the roots of this. And so not only to discuss it, but also to make connections with each other, to have any questions answered or have any answers questions perhaps also, and have an opportunity really to share together. So as I have said in the past, you're absolutely welcome, if you're on this call, to press *6 at any time if you'd like to share something or ask a question or make a comment. And so this is our 71st, I believe, 71st monthly gathering. We've been doing this for now in our sixth year, I guess almost seventh year. And just to let you know, I'll mention it at the end, but in case you're not here, next month, May of 2017, I will be in China for the whole second half of the month. So I was thinking we could have our third Thursday a little bit earlier. So we'll have it on the second Thursday next month, because on the third and fourth Thursdays, I'll be in China and spreading the vegan message, which I think is very exciting, because China is such an amazing place on many levels. And so May 11th, mark your calendars for May 11th for the World Peace Diet Circle for May. And we won't be having to do that again, I don't think, until maybe in October, actually, probably. We'll be doing a lot in Europe and India. The vegan movement in India is still very young, and apparently, even though it's ancient for vegetarian and for ahimsa, but for vegan, it's quite young. But I've been invited, and one of our World Peace Diet facilitators has generously offered to help finance a India vegan tour for Madeline and me, and so we'll be doing that, and then going to Taiwan and China also in October, November. So those months maybe, but otherwise we'll be meeting on the third Thursday, I think, pretty much regularly this year. And just going into this call, I'd like to honor our little ritual, I guess it is in some ways, of taking just a couple of minutes to turn our attention together within. So let's do that wherever you happen to be. If you're driving, keep your eyes on the road, and if not, just feel free to close your eyes if you'd like, or contemplate for a few moments. And let's just breathe for a moment and give thanks for this precious opportunity that we have together this evening. And give thanks for everyone who's on this call, knowing that each and every one of us is a precious part of the awakening of humanity's conscience and awareness, that we may transform our relationship with other animals and with the ecosystems, with each other, with our lives, awaken respect and kindness and awareness in our own hearts and minds, and then also to share and spread this to others as well. So we give thanks for everyone who's on the call and everyone who's part of this movement, wherever they may be in the world today, and also those coming in the future and those who have gone before us in the past, knowing that each and every one of us is a part of this movement, maybe perhaps for many lifetimes, actually, and that we're doing our best again to remember our purpose and mission and to contribute our unique piece of the puzzle that humanity is facing, and that we're together, we're co-creating a solution, a beautiful opportunity that we have to forge a new pathway. So we give thanks also for all the beautiful animals who share this planet with us, that we, the beings that we refer to as animals, actually, I should say, and horses and fishes and birds and foxes and all the dragons and all the animals that are celebrating their lives and fulfilling their niches and whose awareness is also intimately connected with the creator, the creative power who celebrates through all of us, and that we may uncover and awaken our wisdom and our relationships with them and lay a foundation for peace and freedom, justice and equality in our society and sustainability. We give thanks knowing that there are many challenges that we face, but that underlying those challenges we have the resources to effectively deal with them and to turn things around here. So we give thanks knowing this is so. So it is. All right, so bless you all. Again, thanks so much for joining us. Madeline and I are honored by your presence. Madeline's not on the call right at the moment, but she's hovering around here and doing things to help keep things moving forward. And I want to thank Tara also. She's been a big help over the years. And she recently informed us that she's not able to help out with some of the technical things that need doing here. So I just want to put it out there. If any one of you has maybe in an hour or so free per week to help out with kind of internet things. I'm sort of moderately internet savvy, but not like she knew a little bit more. She knew more than me and was able to solve things. And she'll help out if we, you know, have things we can't figure out. But it would be nice to have someone who's somewhat knowledgeable about maybe websites and things who can just assist us from time to time to help fill her shoes, because that would be great, actually, if it's possible. We may have a little funds also to help out with that, but it's primarily a volunteer position, I would say. Yeah, although for the Circle of Compassion, we are thinking of a position that would be paid to really help get the word about the Circle of Compassion and the prayer circle for animals out into the world through social media and internet and however, you know. So if any of you has an interest in that, please let me know. Judy, Carmen, and I, and Madeline are the three primary people that are involved with that. And as you know, we say every day at noon the prayer for animals, which goes like this: compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. If you go to our website, the website for this prayer circle for animals, it's simply circleofcompassion.org. If you just go to circleofcompassion.org, you'll see it right there, this prayer, and it's been translated now into, I think, I don't know, 19 languages or something. It's wonderful how people keep sending us the translation to this prayer in Finnish and Slovenian and German, French, Italian, and everything else. So please let us know if you might be interested in being part of our team. As I say, now that Tara is withdrawing, we have needs for someone in a few different areas. That would be helpful. Very helpful. We're just putting it out right here, not anywhere else, because it's we'd like to have someone who's not only a vegan but also they're on the same page with the spiritual dimension as well. But if you know someone that might you think would be a good fit, let us know that too. All right. So thank you so much, everyone. And so today we have our good friend, longtime wonderful friend Patricia Todd. With us to begin our hour together. Our hour usually runs about an hour, between an hour and 90 minutes. And Patricia lives in Southern California. She's been a World Peace Time facilitator for many years, and we have gotten to know her and Manuel, her husband, for quite well over the years. And especially when we travel down to Southern California, she's also been up here to Northern California. And we really appreciate the efforts that she's been making to bring the World Peace Diet message in a variety of ways to people in the, she's involved with the San Gabriel Valley Humane Society, I believe it's called. And I'm going to let Patricia talk a little bit about the exciting thing that happened recently for her. I mean, there's been a few exciting things. One wasn't so exciting. Yes, I don't know. I'll talk about that. It was exciting, the anniversary. I'll let her talk about that and share maybe some of the learnings that have come and some of the challenges and some of the successes that she's experienced over the last few years. And Patricia has really been a social justice activist and advocate for many, many years, probably for decades, really. And before going vegan and seeing these connections, and we just are so delighted that Patricia is able to join us. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute your phone, Patricia. And hello, can you hear me?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello.
Very good. Hi.
Oh,
yeah,
wonderful.
Perfect. Yeah. So, yeah, please tell us a little bit, fill us in about the recent celebration that you had and how it all went and what it was about, because I think it would be exciting to hear about that.
Okay, sure, and thank you for having me, Will, and everybody. First, I wanted to just say how I came across this idea to start the Vegan Education and Support Group and to connect it to the local Humane Society. It was surprisingly through an episode of In the Heat of the Night TV show. Carol O'Connor had asked the question, it was an episode confronting a very deep systemic problem, and he said, what do we do? Where do we start? And it was very moving to me. The answer the other person gave was, do what you can, start where you are. So I kind of put that together with, something you often said to us, Will, which was, see if you can identify your unique gift to give to heal the world and for the animals. So, as you said, I received the World Peace Diet training in October 2010 in Ohio, and then just a little background, in the summer of 2011, I became a volunteer dog walker at the San Gabriel Valley Humane Society, and in the spring of 2015, I founded and facilitate a weekly vegan education and support group, which I call Veg Help 101. So the goal of the group is to help specifically volunteers, staff, and clients at the shelter, I'll just shorten the word San Gabriel Valley Humane Society to shelter, so that they can make the connection between shelter animals and all other animals, particularly those used in animal agriculture. And in the language we would all use, to expand their sphere of compassion to include all animals. So the idea was to help bring this, what should be a very logical connection to light, via eventually offering an on-site vegan education support group at the shelter. And our philosophy is, pretty basic, go vegan, stay vegan, plant the seed and water the vegan garden. Everybody's welcome to the group. If you're just, curious about finding out what veganism is, to if you're already a long-term vegan. And again, the idea is to strengthen the collaboration between the shelter and veganism via the VegHelp 101 group, and ultimately to dismantle speciesism. So the I'm getting to the party that we had, but the stages of the goal would be in three. I kind of broke it down. The first was to establish VegHelp 101 in the community, and that I can go over how I did if we have time, which is pretty much done now. I'm established via like vegan restaurants and through other well-known vegans, etc. So I'm kind of on the map now, at least in the LA area. The second goal, which I'm working on now, I've already gotten part of that to have, if we started the group, getting the meeting, but I would like to have us meet at the shelter. But currently, while there's a room where we could do it, a really nice little room, could hold 20 people, but it's inaccessible to the public. So what I want to do is raise money, hopefully from vegan philanthropists who will support this idea of spreading veganism at the shelter, and also if they would be willing to donate money to renovate the shelter, which is essentially in shambles because it's been there since 1924.
Wow.
And it really is. It's just a great shelter full of such dedicated, loving people. And then ultimately, my third part of the goal would be to spread this idea to other shelters, you know, if we're successful, and I'm hoping we will be, to have that be an example or a paradigm for many other shelters and humane societies throughout the U.S. So that's
wow.
My main goal.
Mm-hmm.
And then the chronology is, in December 2013, I met with the shelter board of directors and friends of the board, and they weren't quite ready to move ahead on it, but they said, you can start by putting pamphlets, and I have vegan outreach and farm animal rights movement pamphlets in the front office of the shelter, and we also have a weekly email that goes out to over 200 volunteers that talks about the vegan education support group I do. And then in that was started in the end of December 2013. In March of 2015, we started the weekly meetings two blocks away. It's actually at the California Mission Inn, which is an assisted living facility. I got through a connection at the shelter, who's the director there. It's a very nice, beautiful venue, but I still would rather have it on the premises of the shelter. And then in spring 2016, we became official partners. That is VegHelp 101 and the shelter, which was a very big step because they're really opening up their, you know, their doors, the window to at least look at veganism a little bit more seriously. And,
right.
Yeah. Hmm. And in the last summer, we shared a booth, you know, very openly saying at a health fair, San Gabriel Valley Humane Society and VegHelp 101 Vegan Education Support Group, you know, share our love of animals. So we both had our literature at the same booth as open community partners.
Great.
Like, I don't want it to be just my little secret, you know. It can't be all coming from what I want it to be. It has to be real, right, on their end. And then when we had our two-year anniversary was coming up this March 25th, and I was actually just going to have kind of a potluck, but really hoping to get more of the regular members, you know, to be sure they came. But then I had the opportunity to talk with our incoming president of the shelter board of directors. Her name is Doreen Hudson. And I invited her, and to actually my surprise, I invited her to the party. She said, yes, I'll go. And I saw her put it down on her calendar. And this is a big deal. She just retired from LAPD, 40 years working there, her last position was the head of forensics. So she's a very accomplished and bright woman and a leader. So I was so excited that she was going to come. I really got on the ball. Okay. But before I get into what happened at the party, I just wanted to mention a little bit about the philosophy and how I've been working to make this happen. It's to follow through, even if the process is very slow, to not be attached to the results, but to be very persistent. And, Will, I remember what you've said once. I heard you say, you know, we're on solid ground, people. We're on solid ground here. So that all actually helps me remember, don't give up step by step. And then I also really try and meet people where they are. And I also remember from the training you said something will, like people will only hear your message to the extent they perceive you have heard them out. Did I get that right?
Right, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and so I really do a lot of listening. I put down here, it might sound kind of crass, but I shut up to ultimately be heard. So in other words,
right.
I don't go in there yammering everything about veganism and animal rights because I'm quite certain it will actually be a turnoff. Because another thing I've learned is don't think you can go in with your cause and, you know, kind of impose it on other people. Like, the people there are into dogs and cats and bunnies, seriously. But, you know, they still have the curtain up, the majority
right.
of people. So although that's hard to do, I found that's what I need to do to ultimately be approachable, to not intrude upon their cause. So what I do is let them know this is available and then let them come to me if they're interested. And actually, I mentor new dog walkers, and I just let them know, you know, oh, right, it's right over here where we have our Veg Help 101 group, and if you have any questions, let me know. And I'd say about a third of the time, they're interested, and some of them have come.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the strategy, I really think it's important for us to all know that our project is important. I think I tend to think, oh, who am I? What can I really do? You know, so I just keep that in mind. Even though I'm not a celebrity, I haven't written a book. I read your book. I get it. I'm, you know, all in. And so just realizing that fellow vegan advocates want to help. So an example is at the party, our two-year anniversary, I realized, dang, I better get on the stick here and see what I can do to impress Doreen Hudson, who's coming. One of our members had been, her name's Asia, she had been attending Los Angeles Animal Save. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's kind of a takeoff on Toronto Pig Save. And it's just been going for a few months now. Amy Jean Davis started it. She's a huge animal rights activist on her own. The vigil is done at Farmer John's Vigil now every Sunday evening. Farmer John's. They have
which is what?
A slaughterhouse.
Oh my gosh! You have a vigil at Farmer John's slaughterhouse.
Now it's every Sunday night. And the last a couple Sundays ago, I couldn't make it, but they had like Sean Munson was there. Joaquin Phoenix was there.
Sean Munson is the film, just so everybody knows, the filmmaker of Earthlings. Yes.
Yes. And he is her boyfriend. So, you know, I often see them in pictures. Even at the, when she came and she came and performed at our party three songs. And I really recommend Googling her, Amy Jean Davis, and hearing her song, I Got You. It's actually about her and a chihuahua, but it really, I think, resonated with the shelter people. But she's a huge, you know, animal rights advocate. And, you know, she right away said, I'll be there. Count on me. I'll be there. And I was so excited. She's an American Idol winner contestant on season 7. So she's an excellent singer. She's just, you know, she was dynamite. So impressive. And then the Saturday before the group, I had got something from L.A. Vegan Toastmasters, and Dr. Armitie May, she's known as the Vegan Vet, she's the president of that group, and I've met her on numerous occasions out here, but I thought, you know what, they were having a Toastmaster competition of all, not just vegan, but all the ones locally, she was going to speak, so I thought, I'm going to get out there on the west side, and I did, and I heard her speak, and I said, are you available on Wednesday night? Why, she said. And I told her, and she came, and she really got into the cause, and she came, she gave a Toastmaster speak that was so impressive. You know, you just couldn't, in other words, she knew who she was talking to, too, a mixture of people, and that Doreen Hudson was there, who I, you know, I'll be frank, I was most trying to impress her, because she is key. And, you know, that's another thing, who is the person in power, who has the power to make the decision? And at the local shelter, she sets the tone. So the other thing I've done in terms of getting on the map, if you will, my group, is having community partners. And I recommend not having too many, I guess depending on how you define a community partner, but for me it's promoting each other's cause or mission and also attending their events. So we have four. One is the Green Menu, who provides a discount card to vegan restaurants. The other is Plant Pure Pod Northeast LA, which probably many of you know about, grew out of Plant Pure Nation, a grassroots movement to spread the vegan message. And
great.
Then and I belong to them, and they're a super group of people. And I'm always recommending them. And then also, of course, the San Gabriel Valley Humane Society is a community partner, and also Quaker Animal Kinship, which I love their nickname, is Quack. And they're mostly a group of wonderful intellectuals, and we meet once a month for a potluck and a meeting. So those are my official community partners. And then I'm also on the local meetup Vegan Alliance. About a dozen local vegan restaurants have my business card. I'm on veganevents.org, and that really gets people there, too. And another strategy I use, because I'm here in Hollywood land, you know, so if I meet celebrities or if I'm going to go someplace where they are, I make a point to meet them. For example, I go once a month through the shelter to Fox News Good Day LA to take a dog who's up for adoption. It's a, you know, it's a called a Honda Pet Project. And and it finally dawned on me, I kind of upped my game, my appearance, too, just to look as nice as I can when I go there. And, you know, several times I've been able to meet celebrities. Recently I met Cheech Marin, and I don't know if you know Luis Guzman. He's a guy, nobody knows his name, but you know him. He often plays a villain. So I've met them there. I've also met, you know, Kip Anderson, Jackson Galaxy, who does My Cat from Hell. And I don't know if everybody knows he's a vegan. He was one of the star speakers at the Big Animal Rights Conference last summer by the L.A. airport. So, for example, I purposely signed up to the Tofurkey Trot at the Rose Bowl because I knew he was going to be there, and I purposely got a booth near him to meet him. And he said he'd be very interested in helping, just that he's crazy busy right now. But he gave me the contact information. I'm in contact with them. I invited him to the party. He just can't make it. But we're on each other's radar, at least. And also, I've met somebody named Frances Fisher. She's an actress in her own right, and she's an ex-spouse of Clint Eastwood. But she spoke up at a social justice meeting for animals. So, you know, at least I have made some contact with her. And I always carry my business cards with me. So I'm just always thinking, how can I network? Because it may be one out of 100, but that one person out of 100 can really help you. And then at the shelter, my philosophy is to become invaluable. So, like I said, I do this Good Day LA thing, which means I have to get up at 4:30 and go across town for a 90-second thing. Nobody wants to do it. Most people are working. So I believe they're very thankful. The shelter's thankful to me because I do something nobody else wants to do or can do. We do gardening. We speak at city council meetings, which some people are too afraid to do. So that's kind of a tactic I use, and I want to do it, too. And also, I keep track of the interested volunteers so that, you know, when the time is right, I can have them, you know, say something in favor of the group. And then also I've noticed how visibility is so important, even though I kind of hate doing it. Social media, you know, I have a website. I'm on Facebook and Instagram. As a quick example, our shelter, I had nothing to do with it, but a volunteer just popped up a year ago and put us on Instagram. And perhaps you've heard of Save Our Shelter. They do upgrades for renovations for different animal shelters. They liked what they saw. They came over and interviewed us, and we got $80,000 worth of upgrades, new medical equipment, new dog runs, renovation. So that's another reason I'm on Instagram.
Wow.
I'm still learning and trying to take better, cuter, you know, eye-catching pictures, but you can get noticed that way. And then lastly, I want to say one thing I try and do is be a good liaison. So, for example, at the party, I know somebody, this woman named Asia, who she became vegan because of her dog. She had an epiphany. What's the difference between a dog and a pig? That was it for her. It was a dog that led her to veganism. So I said, oh, Doreen, I'd like to introduce you. Doreen's the president of the board at the shelter, to Asia. So they talked. So at the party, like I said, I think it was a huge success. The music was great. The presentation was wonderful. Doreen gave a 20-minute presentation on the history of the shelter. We had 30 people there. We had two videographers. I paid somebody $200 to do it, and then it turns out the vegan vet had a friend. Maybe you've heard of him. He's also a vegan, named Jeff Fleiss. And he did, in another room, he did separate interviews with the vegan vet, Armitie May, and with Amy Jean Davis and some other people, which I plan to use. I just downloaded them on a portable hard drive, which was a little complicated for me to get that. But anyway, we've got that now, and soon we're going to start editing it so that I can use it for promotion, because they were, both those people, Armitie May and Amy Jean Davis, were very articulate. They totally got my mission, you know. Mm. And I think they can be, I hope, you know, instrumental in validating this mission to combine the shelter and veganism. And, of course, you know, I think Sean Munson, if he has time, I think there's a very good chance, you know, maybe he could help me, like, facilitate getting some sort of fundraising event going here in Southern California. So, that's pretty much what happened. And so the next step is to work on editing the video and getting out there and doing the actual fundraising. And I need to meet with Doreen and, you know, be sure what she's willing to do, too, if she can put us up stronger on the website. Right now there's really nothing that says we're community partners. And I think she needs to do a little convincing of the board as well. And also, I did just want to tell you that at the party, she told me, she looked me just so directly in the eye, and she said, you know, Patricia, I want you to know, I never told you how strongly, when you came to the board meeting in December of 2013, I almost want to cry now because I didn't know it. She goes, you really made an impact on me. I kept thinking, whenever I can, I'm going to start with Meatless Monday. So, you know, to us, you know, quote-unquote hardcore vegans, that may not seem like much. But to me, it's a huge step because she's, you know, she got it. She got it on some level. And she said, you're such a pioneer and vanguard, and you're so courageous to do that. And I really respect you, and I'm starting Meatless Monday now. So I saw that.
Beautiful, yeah.
Too, in the process, that she, you know, kind of revealed that to me, and she also said, you know, her husband is, you know, it's going to take a long way for him. He's not quite on board, but anyways, that's it. So I'm open to questions. Or
great. Okay. Well, thank you for just giving us a beautiful background, not only of your activities, but your philosophy and the logic and the tactics and strategies you've been using. Please press *6, anyone who's listening in, if you would like to ask Patricia a question. And I just had a couple of quick questions as you were explaining there. So basically, you have for 2 years, you've been having Veg Help 101 meeting near the Humane Society. How often is it?
Once a week, every Wednesday from 5:30 to 7:30, and it's kind of hard to shut us up. We want to keep talking, so we often stay later.
Every Wednesday, 5:30 to 7:30. And do people bring food usually, or do you just, you know, get together? What do you actually do during the meetings, basically?
Okay.
I mean,
well,
for every week.
The first Wednesday of every month, we have, call it dinner and a movie. It's a vegan potluck. And like this, probably the next meeting will show What the Health, which probably most people know is put out by Kip Anderson and Keegan Kuhn, and it's very much like Cowspiracy. So we show, you know, all the, you know, we've shown Cowspiracy, we've shown Plant Pure Nation. So that's once a month. And then a lot of times people will just bring something to share, too, at the meeting. But what we do, you know, like the name of the group is Veg Help 101 Vegan Education and Support Group. So the education, it just comes to me. I mean, you all know, right, from Facebook. I mean, there's so many good things, so many good articles, One Green Planet, you know, things that you put out. So I was so very impressed by your article, Will, the Awakening from Materialism, Vegans as Healers. And
yes.
Manuel has told me I go too fast. I push people through it too fast. So what I decided to do, and people really love the article, we probably have met about 5 times. We just finished it last night because we're really, you know, digging into that article every paragraph by paragraph and discussing what it means. So the first, so part of the group, actually that's usually the second half, is something along those lines. You know, we might talk about what herdism is another time. We've talked about what happens to goats, what happens to sheep. We've talked about the issue of personal choice, which is, you know, such a thoroughly juicy topic. I love it, that topic.
Personal choice, right? Yeah.
Because most people want to say yes until I set them straight. Only kidding on that. But, you know, make the most salient points that, well, anyway, not time to go into it. So, you know, we talk about all those things. We talk about the myths. We talk about things like how to handle holidays and, you know, friends and coworkers and relatives that might be trying to sabotage us.
Right.
You know, and that when I discuss why at the very beginning in the introduction, I often say, you know, I heard at the Farm Animal Rights Conference last summer, they said 75% to 80% of people who try and go vegetarian or vegan fall off, they go back, you know, so that because it's just so important to have the support. So the first half of the meeting, that's what we do. We talk about, hey, this is going on with me, or, you know, my partner is giving me grief over it. How, you know, what can I do? Or even when people are going vegan, they want to know, what should I do about the meat in my freezer? So we just talk about the options, you know.
Right.
All the various challenges that we face going and staying vegan. But as you said, there are challenges, but we also have the resources to deal with them.
Right. So the people who are attending, is there a turnover kind of, or you have like a kind of a core group that always gets together and then other people coming and going?
Yeah, I would say half the group is regulars, and they might, you know, one person has been there since the beginning. She's going to move to Arizona. But some people stay like 6 months to a year. And some just come once. So I'd say it's about half of the people are, you know, returning. And about half of the people may pop in once in a while or just even once. You know, because I think I've mentioned to you before, you know, we have people that come from like an hour and a half away. We have somebody coming now, two young men. To me, they're young. They're in their 20s. You know, one of them has green hair. And they're coming from Venice Beach, which is about 30 miles from here. And to get there at 5:30 is like a miracle. You know, it's traffic city.
Right.
And we have somebody come from Hollywood last night, which is also very hard. So it, and they said it was just like, it was almost as I had them there as a plant, because, you know, we've had a meeting on the four stages of veganism, you know, that you talk about being, you know, confusion.
Yeah.
Angry, closeted, and deep veganism. And one of them said, you know, I am so angry. And so her main thing was, I'm so angry. I've heard about your group for a year, and I finally made it. And the other person said, I just am sticking to myself now. I'm just, you know, not going to talk about it.
Right.
You know, so they were both in a stage. And just even saying, you know what? These are some of you are classically exhibiting, it's very normal to feel that way, and then what we can do about it.
Great. Wow. That's really inspiring to hear. You know, the people are coming, and you're talking about these the real nitty-gritty, and it's so beautiful. I had another, just a couple of quick questions more, just to clarify. You talked about, in the beginning, your three primary goals of establishing, getting more and more established, and how well that's going. You also wanted to raise some funds for the shelter itself. When you talk about the shelter, I'm picturing, and you say it's an old ramshackle place, I'm picturing kind of like dog runs and places for all these animals, and then some, you know, a front counter, and then just everything sort of falling apart. So you want to raise funds to, like, renovate the entire place so that you also have...
It depends how much money we can get.
Yeah.
But the dog kennels in themselves are embarrassing. I mean, they're so rusted. And, you know, Manuel, Manuel was in charge of the Girl Scouts. They, for some reason, they were so intent on getting Girl Scouts to paint it. I thought that was a horrible idea because it's all these kids running around. But Manuel managed, he's a past painter, to supervise them and have them paint it. But just like a year later, now it's all rusty and they're actually jagged. You know, it doesn't have a proper heating or, you know, or also like the spraying of the mist. Like the Pasadena Humane Society is just, you know, they've got everything because they're in a richer community and they do fundraising. But so, you know, if we need, and I think they have to put, they, because we are animal control through three cities, we cannot not take any animal. And a lot of times, especially the cats come in pregnant, you know, and so then they do need, they put down probably a quarter, I don't know, something like a quarter of the cats. And they want to have more room for the cats, better room.
Yeah.
And that's what we're really hoping, maybe Jackson Galaxy will step in and help, but that's, you know.
Right. And then also as part of that, a room for you to have your meeting.
Yes, and even Manuel and his brother, they painted it, they got it up. It looks beautiful, but the problem is it's in the area, you can't get to it without going through areas that are staff areas only and or where the animals are. And they said I could use the room originally, but only from the hours of 9 to 11 a.m. and 2 to 4 p.m.
No.
Like, it may be just for volunteers. But, you know, that just doesn't really work. So, yeah, if at minimum I could get somehow it, you know, accessibility to that room, you know, it, where there's a problem, there's a solution, right? It could be done. But, you know, if people see this idea, like a vegan philanthropist, see it as, wow, that's a great idea. I really don't know. I mean, it could be they'd say, yeah, you know, you got to give me more. But that's right now, that's what I'm going on and just, you know, going to kind of take it from here.
Right. Great. And then the other thing is, so you're wanting to work together more with the Humane Society, and I'm sure some people on our call, I mean, I'm sure probably most of the people are aware that Humane Societies in general, I mean, the local people on the ground who are taking care of volunteering at Humane Societies, some of them are vegans, but so many are not because they just don't make those connections. And there's quite a few situations where they have fundraisers and serve chicken or hot dogs or whatever, and then people, but I think that's changing gradually because of people like you. But did they, like when you said in the beginning that you had, you sent out an email to 200 people, did they give you access to their email list so you could contact their people?
They haven't done that. Although I do finally have access to the Facebook to post things, but not so much in vegan. It's just I have a kind of a regular blurb that they put out that goes with, along with everything else.
Right. So basically, from the beginning, you were pretty much on your own. But with time, you've been able to just create a better and better relationship with them, so that it's mutually beneficial for them. And for you, I mean, I think it's for helping them too, because it's bringing people, you know, around and can, like you say, you're helping in so many different ways and other people are giving more energy and then it's great for you also. Yeah. Well, that's an interesting thing. Do you know of anybody else who's working through Humane Society, a local Humane Society, to bring the vegan message? Are you the only, I don't know of anyone personally, but have you met anybody or heard of anybody that's doing what you're doing?
Yes and no. I can tell you that a few years ago, somebody, unfortunately, who passed away from the Humane Society, he said there's a whole day workshop in San Pedro put on by Pet Finder. They're the ones that post, you know, the dogs, like lost dogs and whatnot, and dogs and cats that are up for adoption. And I went there, and they serve vegan. And that was, you know, about dogs and cats. So they serve vegan food. And then I will say this. Lately, we have a member, an active volunteer from the Pasadena Humane Society volunteering with us who wants to help us out. And I forget if it was her or somebody else when I went to one of their dog adoption events, and they told me most people at Pasadena are vegan, but they don't have any, you know, they're not putting a connection, trying to make that.
They're not trying to help spread that message.
Right.
Not
to my knowledge, anyway.
Right. So your idea, that was your third goal, is to sort of create a template where you can perhaps roll it out to other, maybe have a educational seminar or something for people who are in there, who, because I'm sure there are vegans. I mean, I know, like up here in Santa Rosa, we were just, Madeline went to Switzerland, and I stayed with our friend Karen Stanley, and she's a vegan, and would love to, I think, you know, I could talk to her about it, but she volunteers at the Humane Society, and she was telling me sort of the same thing, you know, she's at the Santa Rosa Humane Society, and most of the people aren't vegan, and but, you know, your idea of just walking in and sort of starting to just bring the message to people who are already obviously open to this is a great idea, I think.
And so much. Because
the Humane Society is everywhere. There's so many,
And there was a lot of resistance from the board, even at the time I started this mission, the president of the board, I just happened to overhear her, like, ordering a chicken salad sandwich. And after about a year, I was telling her, oh, you know what? I'm going to Dodger Stadium. I bought 3 tickets because Paul McCartney was going to be there. And I had met somebody who was a drummer, who knew the drummer for Paul McCartney. Anyway, these wild things in my head. I was thinking, who knows? You know, who knows if I could possibly meet him? Of course I didn't, but... and somehow in the conversation I said, you know, even Kaiser Permanente now recommends a whole food plant-based diet, and I mean a vegan diet. And she goes, she said something along the lines of, well, you're going to have to prove it to me. And I had already, in that meeting, provided a packet, which I very carefully, you know, chose the most compelling articles for, you know, the different reasons to go vegan, of course, including health. So she probably just threw that aside. Because she's telling me, you know, you have to prove it to me. I won't mention any names. But I'm just saying, you know, it's not easy. That exists.
Right.
You know, they just don't want to hear it. But some people, even somebody that was on the board for a while, once he came up to me and said, you know, Patricia, I'm starting to feel guilty. So, and we just talked a little bit more. And that was it. But, you know.
Great. Wow, well, it's so good to hear this good news, and I just want to thank you for your perseverance. I mean, in 2 years, every single week, to show up, rain, shine, sleet, and hail, and everything else, and be there
and
help people. Oh my gosh! Yeah, you told me.
Very briefly, I did get rear-ended, and then I hit the person in front, and I had just gotten my personalized license plate, which says "Veg Help." I was so excited, and I got my car detailed, like I'm driving around town spreading the word. I have my car magnets also for Veg Help 101. And so somebody plows into the back of me and just reams it. So last night we were joking that it must have been a carnivore.
a Freudian slip of the brake.
And then we said, oh, you know the term carnist? And then we changed it to a carnist, but that was mostly joking. But
Right.
Yeah.
Wow, that's it. Yeah. No, I really just want to thank you for, you know, being such a beautiful example. Judy Carmen has raised her hand and would like to say, maybe say something, make a question. So I'm just going to go ahead and unmute Judy and just see. Judy, are you there? Yes.
Yeah, I'm here.
Great.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that Animal Place, the sanctuary, has...
in Grass Valley.
They have a project called Food for Thought, adopting an animal-friendly menu policy.
Nice.
And it's for animal shelters, humane societies and rescues, and wildlife organizations and environmental organizations. So they're trying to encourage humane societies, animal shelters, to only serve vegan food at their gatherings and fundraisers and that sort of thing. So I just wanted to be sure everybody knew about that.
Thanks. That's really great, Judy, for mentioning that. I was aware of that, and I forgot to bring it up, but that's a really important point. Yeah, they're working. They've got a whole thing. I guess you can go on their website, right, and find out more?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It's called Food for Thought Campaign.org.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets you there. Mm. And I believe they give money, I think, to help a group get started or something. I'm not sure about that.
Mm.
But and then you can get a Food for Thought report card, it looks like.
Mm.
So a shelter report card if you're having, let's see what it says here, to ask about their menu policies. And so they have created a list, it looks like. And then there's a key. A is a vegan policy is written and board approved. And B is a vegetarian policy is written and board approved. So they're giving the report card. That's the report card key.
And do they actually list, but they don't actually list the names of humane societies on their website with their, you know, who's got a better grade or something
they
like that.
They do.
So publicly you can see that
I'm looking at it right here.
Oh, I see. That's great. So
it's organized by state.
It's shining
the
light.
Some Canada ones also.
Uh-huh.
So,
great.
Yeah.
Cool.
So get a little competition going here.
Right. Thanks, Judy.
Okay,
that's
well, I
that's
just
a great point.
To mention that.
Yeah,
okay.
right. Thank you.
Take care.
All righty, thanks. Well, thanks
Bye.
So much, Patricia. I mean, it's really been just very inspiring to hear how you've been able to keep this thing moving forward and gather momentum and touch, I'm sure, a lot of people's lives. And the idea of really mentoring people who go vegan or who are thinking of going vegan and not just leave them flailing about in a world where vegans are just seen as an irritation and annoying and so forth. I think it's so important to do that.
May I throw in one more quick thing?
Okay, yeah.
We all brought, food and we had so much delicious food. I happen to have gotten some catering done from One Veg World, which you may know is somehow connected to Master Ching Hai. And, they have her book and stuff from her there anyway.
Okay.
And I went there a few days beforehand to, test out several types of food, and I ended up getting the barbecue drumsticks and jackfruit burritos. These drumsticks are like drop-dead delicious, as was the burrito. So I thought, you know what? I want to appeal to non-vegans.
Yes.
And Doreen, out of all the food she could have chosen, she chose those two. And when I was there, when she sitting in a little circle with her, she bit into it, and she was in shock. I didn't really ask her why, but I think she thought it tasted so much like chicken, or like it was so good. I mean, it was drop-dead delicious. So I was so happy that, we were able to demonstrate, the food
right.
is good.
Yeah, that's part of being on solid ground, I mean, not only is the philosophy totally, and everything else about it, but the food, is so much better, really, once people wake up. I mean, it's so good, and it's getting better all the time. I mean, it's really amazing. But, that's really important.
Yeah, so thank you very much for having me.
Yes, it's been great. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
And we wish you the best in getting your car repaired and going forward. Let's stay in touch about the possibilities of doing something together down there when we come down to Southern California.
That'd be wonderful.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much, Patricia.
Thank you.
Really appreciate
it.
Give all love to Manuel. Yeah, thanks.
Okay, will do.
Thanks.
Bye.
Wow. So thank you so much. That was an example. To me, it's a very inspiring example of someone who's chipping away, and I just loved hearing all about that. So I hope it was helpful for everyone too. And I know there's a few other things I wanted to emphasize here, and maybe I'll do that quickly. And then I also want to have Lily come on, Lily Macy, because the World Peace Diet Sunday is going to be starting up pretty soon. So I just wanted to mention a couple of things first, briefly here. I know we're getting going along here on the time. Please, definitely, if you can, look through the resources that I put together for April 2017. There's my new essay, which is called Waste, the Defining Metaphor of Our Culture, and I could talk about that a long time, but you can read the article, the essay, and maybe if there's a little time at the end, I'll mention some of the main points. But, to me, it's just so important to realize, I guess, this this idea of entitlement in our society as human beings, that we can just use things and throw things away, not only things, but animals and lives and purposes, that they're just consumable. Everything is consumable. And it's shocking, I think, really, in our society to look deeply and see the quantity of waste that's going on. And so I talk about that in the essay, how not only is agriculture devastating because of its inherent wastefulness in terms of water, petroleum, land, grain, and everything, but then at a deeper level, it's wasting the animals. I mean, in so many different ways, the idea that when animals come down with some kind of disease, or they're hyper-crowded, they'll just kill thousands, tens of thousands of animals because they don't want to slaughter them, they just kill them. Or like I was talking about in the article, how there are these baby lambs in England and all over the world, actually it happens in the United States also, who, because they want to, they bring the females into heat early so that the lambs will be the right size for the Easter lamb. And so they're being born in February when it's freezing, and they're dying. A lot of them die. Literally millions are dying, of cold. But it's just considered an acceptable level of waste. Enough of them make it so that they can make a profit. That's all they care about. And, freezing to death, I mean, that's a terrible way to die. And so many other types of things, how male chickens are just ground up alive because they can't give eggs by the millions every year, and so many other just rampant. I mean, the wasting of animals' lives, just throwing them away like they're trash, and at a deeper level, how that affects us as psychologically, that we see this rampant in our society, the basic idea, the boomerang effect of what we sow, we reap. And so we have throwaway, obviously we have people who we don't really need. So we'll get, Henry Kissinger's famous for his saying, calling people useless eaters, just get rid of them and reduce the population. We don't need those people. I think many people in our society are really suffering psychologically from the loss of a sense of meaning and purpose and of value and authenticity in their lives, and yet wasting resources, wasting animals, and wasting our own lives, actually, wasting our own lives, eating animals so that we can do what? Watch television and work in an office that's really just putting money in the hands of a wealthy elite. The kind of system have we created, in terms of wasting resources, wasting animals, and wasting human beings, and wasting time, and everything. It's really, as I kept looking deeply into this, I realized that waste, in a sense, is the central metaphor in our society. It's the foundation of animal agriculture. It's based on looking at animals as just things to be used, and it's wasting them. I mean, can you imagine being looked at as just food, and you're sold by the pound, and your abilities to create music or write articles or to fulfill your lives, and those are wasted. Those are just seen as not relevant, thrown away. I mean, the effect that this has on us as a society, I don't think you can begin to comprehend. And then on top of it, the fact that so much food is actually wasted. I mean, the actual waste of food, 40%. And it's bad enough if the food that's thrown away is vegan, plant-based food, but a lot of it is the flesh of animals, the secretions of animals. I mean, the animals suffered so much to have their flesh be on somebody's plate, and then the person throws it in the trash. And it's just absolutely, to me, I'm almost speechless thinking about it. But anyway, this is the kind of thing that's going on in the background all the time. And I think it's why people are so shut down in many ways when we talk to them as vegans, because deep down we're aware of all this, that the tribal mentality of this tribe that we're born into is so toxic and completely out of touch with reality and out of touch with our basic wisdom, and yet it's injected into us, and it's challenging for people to to question it because it means being different, you know. And so as vegans, I think it's really helpful to see clearly the facts of the situation, the rampant waste, and the way that that plays out, not just in the physical world, but in the metaphysical world, how it plays out in the spiritual world, how it plays out psychologically and culturally in so many different ways, how it just goes through our entire planetary web of relations, where we have millions of people whose lives are just seen as not worth anything. They're starving right now, dying of starvation. Tens of thousands of people are starving every day. So this is a direct result of the physical act of wasting grain and of the metaphysical or psychological act of not valuing our lives, this precious human life that we have. So as vegans, the whole idea is to respect things. And so that's one of the things I talked about in the article, really, is to really encourage everybody, if you are a vegan, to try to live your life wasting as little as possible. Not only, I mean, being a vegan, we're already doing that, you know, which is great. But, you know, as I mentioned in the essay, it's kind of sad for me to go to vegan potlucks and see people taking food and then they just throw it in the trash because they took too much. I mean, on a Zen monastery where I lived, it was so great because you could not do that. You know, it was like, you know, the way the meals were done, you know, you put your bowls out and you take the amount of rice and vegetables that you're going to eat, and then you eat it. And you have to more or less be aware of how much you're going to eat, because if I take more than I can eat, there's nothing I can do. You can't throw it away. There's nowhere to throw it away to. I mean, maybe, I guess if you wanted to, you could put it in your pocket. But that'd be about the only thing, because you have to clean out your bowls with tea and then with water and then dry them, put them away, and then you leave the hall. So the whole idea is training and taking responsibility for everything that we use, you know, and that this is not just a good thing to do for the planet. It's something really important to do for us as human beings. There's an old story, you know, about a young monk, Zen monk in China, you know, 1,000 years ago, who heard there was a great Zen master on this faraway mountain, and he made this long, 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 long journey to get there, and he was going up the path to this temple where this great Zen master lived with his students, and there was a stream going along the path, as it very often is, and suddenly he saw coming down the stream a leaf of cabbage, and he was heartbroken because he thought, wow, if this great Zen master was really great, that he would never allow people in the kitchen to waste a leaf of cabbage. I mean, he must not be a great Zen master. He must be kind of a lazy Zen master if his people just allow a leaf of cabbage to wash away like that. So he was really disappointed. He stopped in his tracks. He turned around. He thought, I just made this journey for nothing. I'm going back home. And just at that moment, the cook came running down the pathway and grabbed the leaf of cabbage from the stream and took it and brought it back up, and the monk saw that. He thought, oh, good. It must be a great Zen master here after all. You know, and so, you know, this is obviously a teaching story just designed to impress upon us the sacredness of everything, the sacredness of cabbage leaves, the sacredness of carrots and broccoli and of water and of air and of time. And to respect these resources, to respect other people's time, to respect respect animals, and to respect ourselves, and to just use what we need, and to not just feel a sense of entitlement that we can just take things and throw them away. There is no away anyway, anywhere, anyway. And so this is the practice I find myself to be continually challenging. You know, we can always, I think, probably do better than this, and we have to, you know, each one of us has to draw our lines where we can just, you know, best. But to just kind of have that as something to be conscious of, I think, is really helpful. So I just wanted to mention that. There's also a few other essays that I've written, the Compassion, Truth, and Healing essay, and Taking the Second Step, which is an interview that I did that was transcribed when we were in Madison, Wisconsin. It just came out, and talking about how there's two steps in veganism. The first step is going vegan, right? And that's the step everybody looks at. But there's a second step, which is to bring our whole mentality, our consciousness, into alignment with veganism, which is respect and kindness. So it's possible to go vegan but not take the second step. And really, I think in many ways, not get what veganism is actually about in a deep enough level. So I'm hoping that through writing these articles and talking about these things, we can remember that there's both an outer practice of veganism, there's also an inner practice where we're making an effort to bring our lives, our body, speech, and mind, and what we're doing and saying and thinking into alignment with ahimsa or nonviolence, and living our lives as expressions of this all the time, as much as we can in our relationships with everyone, human animals as well as non-human animals, and that this will, I think, I feel anyway, really help our movement to become much more effective as we each one of us, this kind of goes back to Gandhi, you know, each one of us being the change, not just talking about it and telling other people they should change, but ourselves being this change, what veganism is, which is to get beyond the delusion of separateness to the underlying sense of connectedness that we have with other lives, so that we're naturally doing the best we can to honor and respect them. And then I just also wanted to mention the next thing down, which is that Madeline's mother, Annalise, passed away recently, just I guess it was about 2 weeks ago. And so Madeline just got back a few days ago from Switzerland, where she had to organize the funeral, pretty much, and also the dinner, or actually it was a luncheon afterwards, which was vegan, which was so glad, even though there was quite a bit of resistance from the in-laws, but it was a vegan, and it was delicious, and everybody liked it, and everything went very harmoniously. And I have a link of Madeline's vegan, she was vegan, and she went vegan probably 15 or 18 years ago, about the same time my mother went vegan, and it was great. She really was much healthier because of that, and lived, I think, quite a bit longer. She lived into her 98th year. And there's a video of her 5 years ago in Florida discussing her reasons for being vegan, and I was really glad when I asked her. She said, well, she does it for the animals. And that, you know, she was really a beautiful presence in our life, and she was Madeline's very best friend. They talked for years every other day on the phone, and then toward the end, of course, it was every day. And so she left, I think, a lot of touched hearts. People would come to visit her, and she always made them vegan food and baked vegan cookies and knitted blankets. We have piles of blankets. She loved to knit, and she was blind toward the end, and she just knitted. She came and visited us twice and just knitted and knitted some more, and we have lots of blankets, and we gave lots of blankets to other people, and she knitted quite a while, actually, at one point, blankets that were given away to dog rescue people in New York City that were used for dogs. And she's just a really giving, loving, caring person in our life. So we wish her just the best, and we're very grateful for her presence in our lives. And she's still with us, really. And we do have those two videos if you'd like to see those of her. And, there's a few other things that I think is just interesting. Sandra Higgins, who is our World Peace Diet facility, I've mentioned her before. She's gone through training. She's from Ireland, she's a person who does not at all like to be in public. She really, that's like one of her greatest fears, and yet her dedication to the animals has brought her right into the absolute public spotlight in Ireland. She's mobilized not only her sanctuary that she's kind of created there, where I visited, and she actually set up some lectures for me in Dublin when I was there last year, about a year ago. But she started a as I've mentioned, a billboard campaign that's huge, and she's got donors to support her in this, and it's caused this gigantic dialogue about veganism in Ireland. And so she was just recently on this their national television and in a debate with a guy who's pro eating meat, a restaurant guy, and then they had in the audience they had the head of the Dairy Council of Ireland, the head of the Beef Council of Ireland, they had Roger was there, Roger Yates, who's a longtime vegan activist, and so this was really a debate. And you'll hear, I mean, it's ridiculous the kind of things people say in these debates. But I really my hat's off to Sandra. She's just willing to jump right out and be on national TV and debating people who are, you know, really attacking her strongly for her stand for animals. And she's I think does a great job. So thank you so much, Sandra, and it's great, really great to see the things people are doing. I did also want to mention, I don't have it written anywhere but on this sheet, but I just wanted to mention that I just got an email a couple of days ago. Lorena Mukay, who, as you all know, I think is the founder of ECP Educational, ECP anyway, program. It's vegan education program, and she's a WorldPeace facilitator, and quite a few people have gone through the facilitator training are in her program, and she's hiring more and more people. It's still growing, and they're up now to between 6,000 and 8,000 presentations, reaching 6,000 to 8,000 students, that's what it is, per week. And it's moving up to 10,000, it looks like to me. It's just growing very solidly. She's got people who are trained to give presentations, and they're very well treated, and they're loving it, and all over the United States, Canada now also, as well as Australia. So if you are interested, yes, ECP, Ethical Choices Program, that's what it's called. Please go to Ethical Choices Program, and she is still looking for people to train to go into high schools, basically, and bring the vegan message. You have to go through her training and do it in a way that's very effective, actually, it seems to be. So that's going very well. And so I also wanted to mention Eugene Sway, who's someone that I haven't seen for almost 30 years, but he and I went through the PhD program at Berkeley together. He's Chinese American, an incredible person, actually, all-star, world champion athlete, gymnast, boxer, and swimmer, and dancer, and musician, and architect. But he's most famous for his architecture. Really, really radical, nature-based. And anyway, so we've met again after all these years, and he's read the World Peace Diet just recently. I gave a lecture at Berkeley recently, just like last week, put on by DXC at the Berkeley Animal Rights Center. It's actually an animal rights center in Berkeley. The goal is to have Berkeley be the first city where meat is banned in the entire city in 10 years. They just got Berkeley to be the second city in the United States where fur is banned from being sold. I think it's just great. I mean, they're really charging ahead. but Eugene came to the talk, and he's gone vegan, and he's really excited about it. And so he's working in China. He's employed by the Chinese government. There are these nationalities within China that are ethnicities. They're ethnic groups in China. You know, the most of China, I think it's like 95% of the people are Han Chinese. That's the basic, you know, Chinese people. But there are other ethnicities. There's Tibetans, and then there's Mongolians, and then there's other ethnicities as well in the western regions, primarily of China. And so he's been actually commissioned to build plan cities for these people, the lodgings, the the primary transportation systems, offices, buildings. I mean, something in harmony, though, with their culture, not to impose anything, so to have it be in harmony with their culture. And these are small cities, maybe, you know, 30, 40,000 people. They're not huge cities. I mean, China has, it's nothing for a Chinese city to have, you know, 10 or 15 million people. I mean, there's so many people over there, but, you know, smaller cities. Anyway, he wants to work together with me to make these cities vegan, so that so the entire cities are vegan from the ground up and planned and created and to support veganism. So I'm going to be going to China. He and I really have done a lot of brainstorming about this. It's quite exciting. And I'll be going to China in a month or so and meeting him there in Guangzhou. He's in the southern part of China. He's in Shenzhen near Hong Kong. And I'll be going there too. So it's really great to see all these connections happening. And I've been invited actually also by the Buddhist temple, the large Buddhist temple there, to speak. And this is huge because they're putting serious money behind this, and it's going to be a lot. There's going to be really big events with probably, you know, many hundreds of people, and also on television and recorded, and it's going to be a big deal. And also not just lectures but music. I'm going to be playing the piano, and so I just see great things actually potentially happening in China. The government is behind moving toward a plant-based way of living, so for health and environmental reasons. So this connection with Eugene, I think, is very interesting. He's in Berkeley about 9 months and in China about 3 or 4 months a year. And so we're going to be working together. And you can look him up if you want on the internet. His name is spelled T-S-S-U-I. Maybe I'll make a link for everyone. So anyway, so those are some of the things I just wanted to mention. Gosh, there's so many things that are interesting. And then please go through the listings on the resources. There's a lot of fascinating things, I think, really helpful things. This new British vegan comedy film, Carnage, I think it's, you know, very well done. And it's a little over the top, but I think it's well done. And some great video. There's videos coming out, you know, left and right promoting veganism, which is great to see. Also, Matthew Ricard, the well-known Buddhist author, he's been tested, I guess, by scientists, and his brain, they put him up on a brain scan, and he can generate compassion and joy at levels that are off the charts. So he's been dubbed by scientists the happiest man in the world. And he is a vegan, and he's telling everyone, if you want to be happy, you've got to go vegan. So it's so great. You know, the happiest man in the world, according to scientific research, is this guy who's a vegan. So we have, you know, articles about that, and then a lot more. This wonderful article about a New York dairy. You know, so like they've been a dairy for 90 years, this dairy in New York, and their profits have been dropping the last 10 years, and now they're ditching dairy, and they're completely switching to plant-based milks. They're making plant-based milks, hemp milk, almond milk, I think it is, or hazelnut milk, and you know, they're being very successful. So these kinds of things are great. And I did want to mention, you know, since Judy Carman mentioned Animal Place Sanctuary, that's in Grass Valley, California, and Kim Sterla is the founder. She's a wonderful person, and it's so great to see that all the different things they're doing. And we're thinking potentially of doing a World Peace Diet facilitator training at Animal Place this year, maybe in July or August. Depends if we can, if she can get permits for people to stay there. So it would be an in-person training right on the sanctuary with the cows, pigs, chickens, and all the animals. And it may be more, you know, camping or staying in local hotels, or maybe some lodging there. But if you're interested in that, let me know, and we'll maybe put the word out. So there's lots of great things happening, and I know there's lots of really despairing things happening as well, but there's a lot of positive things happening under the surface. So I want to stop here and invite Lily, let me see if Lily is here, yes, to talk a little bit, because she'll be starting up a World Peace Diet Sunday. and that's going to be coming up soon. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute your phone. Lily, are you there?
Hi, Will.
Oh, good. Hi.
How exciting. What exciting things are going on in the vegan world. I'm just sitting here, kind of my head is spinning. Are we at 10% yet in the vegan movement? Because I think that will be the tipping point, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It'll kind of change everything. But that, oh, man, and, you know, Patricia, what Patricia is doing, that kind of energy. This
wonderful.
Is my fourth year of doing World Peace Diet Sunday. And
what it is, is I
read the World Peace Diet, and I do commentary and also open it up for discussion. And I've had quite a bit of a result. I mean, a lot of people call me all the time and tell me, you know, it's because of the study group and the World Peace Diet. See, the World Peace Diet is the center of my, the centerpiece of my meeting that I have on just on Sundays. It's an hour long, and it's the centerpiece. And that, because it's the thing that made me go vegan. The World Peace Diet was the reason I became vegan. I wasn't even considering going vegan. And then the World Peace Diet got a hold of my heart, and that was it. And I know that I've talked to people who say they were vegan or plant-based or whatever, but what the World Peace Diet does, it helps you make the transformational leap that you need to really be and stay a vegan. And that's why my life is, I'm dedicated to the message of the World Peace Diet. It makes my activism so easy. People from all over, and I'm on the phone, I'm very remote. I live in a very remote place. So I hear about these things happening all over the place, and I'm going, wow, I'd love to be involved in with groups, but I'm in a remote place, and I've been doing this, you know, do what you can and start now, you know, wherever you are, do what you can. And this is what, this is the best I can do at this point. And, you know, it actually is a wonderful thing to do because it's interactive. You're not just watching. Or it's just, you know, people talk, people get involved with the World Peace Diet, which is, we consider to be, and so did Donald Watson, who coined the expression vegan, the Vegan Bible. So it's really a Bible study group. It's the Vegan Bible Study Group, the World Peace Diet. It's a great tool of transformation. It really is. It really, Will Tuttle made the transformational leap, and if you read the World Peace Diet and really get it, he's made the leap for you, you know, and you're just, I'm the living example of this. I read it when it was out for about 6 months, and I've been a vegan. I never thought, oh, gee, I wish I could eat some hapless animal again or drink some of their secretions or eat their secretions. I never thought that way because the World Peace Diet completely transformed my chemistry. It really does that. So I really invite you to use this study group. Of course, the book is wonderful, but many people have the book sitting on their, you know, whatever, where it's sitting, and they're not reading the book. And because, you know, to read a book is putting yourself into it. I read it for you. And since this will be my eighth reading aloud, actually the first two readings my husband read to me aloud, and then I read it aloud to him, and then I said, you know what, I need to be doing this in the world, and it, the best I can on this phone bridge. And so since this is my eighth reading, it's clear. The way I read it is very clear, and people get it. People say, oh, gee, I never got it. I get it now. And this is good, because that's all my life is worth to me, to spread the vegan message, because Will talked about step one and step two, and step three is really sharing the vegan message any way you can. So I just love all the creativity I've heard. My God, turning whole cities in China vegan, you know, having, oh, I mean, it's unbelievable what can happen with the power of one. And every person who's a vegan has that power. And this particular study group is extremely useful for your activism. I know, because it's been very useful for mine. I've developed a whole network of people who are activists just by coming to the World Peace Diet study group. So use it. Let me give you, I don't want to go over time. Use it. Come yourself and, you know, plug other people into it. It's 8 o'clock Pacific Eastern Time. 8 o'clock and Pacific Daylight, I mean, not Pacific, excuse me, 8 o'clock Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. So it's 8 p.m. Eastern and 5 p.m. Pacific every Sunday. When I'm doing this, I never miss a Sunday unless my phones go out. And since I live very rurally, that can happen. It just happened yesterday, and I became freaked out because I thought, I'm starting this now. Why does the phone have to go out for like 48 hours? But, you know, most of the time it's on. And so please come to this. The telephone number is 712-432-3900. And the access code is 568-364-pound. I'll repeat that, and it's also on Will's website as part of his itinerary. 712-432-3900. Access code 568-364-pound. We're also on Facebook. I write a missive every week, and my cohort, Sharon, helps me with that missive. She puts it out there. I tell her what I want to say to the group and where we're going with the World Peace Diet, and she puts it out because I'm not online where I live. You can go online. I haven't done it. I may do it, but we'll see. So there you are, and is there anything else you'd like me to say, Will?
Oh, thank you, Lily. Thanks so much. That's great. You know, you didn't mention it, but you took a hiatus for a couple of months, and so now you're
jumping back in. I did it for 3 months. And I just got back. I've been reading the World Peace Diet for 10 years, either personally or privately, because I don't think that there's any part of the World Peace Diet that shouldn't be read again and again. It's like it's brand new and fresh. And I took a little break from reading it, and now that I'm reading it again, I go, I can't believe, you know, I mean, there's so much there, and it's so rich, and as soon as I start reading it again, I'm much more active in the world. I see the difference. People are calling right and left. I'm reading it. I'm preparing for this first lesson, this first World Peace Diet Sunday, which will start with the preface to the 10th edition. And
that's this coming Sunday.
This coming Sunday. It starts April 23rd, the day after Earth Day, and a very special anniversary for my husband and myself, who we became vegan at the same moment because he was reading the World Peace Diet to me while I was cooking dinner, and I turned to him and I said, we're vegan, aren't we? And he goes, we're vegan, that's it. And we shook hands, and that was it. And 10 plus years later, I'm as excited about this book because this book does it. It transforms people. And so they go from being quiet vegans to being more sharing vegans, sharing the message, and they go from maybe not reading the World Peace Diet to becoming World Peace Diet facilitators. This is what has happened out of this this group. So I'm real thrilled with, you know, it's small, but, you know, it's only, you know, it's one person at a time. Finally, it's one person at a time.
Right.
Just
That's
like
true.
A rainstorm is one drop at a time, and it's a deluge. One person at a time sharing the message. That's all we really have to do as activists. And that's what I do every day. To whomever I am speaking, I will bring in the message, by the way, have you heard of the book, The World Peace Diet? Because that book, if they just get even one chapter is a banquet of why to go vegan. And the whole, it's brimming with that. The whole book is brimming with that. So that's why I did.
Thank you, Lily.
Great. Thank
you, Will. I really appreciate your work. And it's great you're starting up another season of Reading the World Peace Diet on World Peace Diet Sunday.
Yes, fourth year. Yes.
Fourth year, right. So, yeah, as Lily said, you can go to worldpeacediet.com. Just click on upcoming events, and at the very top is the phone number and the access code and the time and all that. So if you want to just tell your friends or whatever, that's a good way to do it too. All right, Lily.
I just want to say one last thing. There's a lot of pain involved in being a real vegan. You know, if there's
Yeah.
Because if you know what's happening 24/7 all over the planet, you know what's happening, and you go,
right.
How can I stop it? Being a vegan activist is the best way to stop your own pain and turn that pain into the joy of seeing other people go vegan and seeing things done like Patricia was doing with the animal shelter. You know, that is a great way to not have so much pain yourself, if anything else. It's a way I found that I was actually in more pain when I wasn't doing my study group than now that I'm going to do it, I'm more joyful.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a really important point. That's so important. Thank you for mentioning
that.
Great. All right. Thanks so much, Lily. Okay. Well, I want to thank everyone for joining us, and that's an important point, to turn our pain or our grief or our sorrow at the devastation that's being wrought on animals and people and ecosystems into some kind of a meaningful action. Gives our life purpose, and it's a beautiful thing because we're doing something, we're contributing. And I just really appreciate that about everyone. You know, I just know that those of you who are on this call, we have Marlene Nero, who's working so diligently with Vegan Nation, her radio show. It's so wonderful to see the work she's doing, and so many other people. I know Michael Lanfield has been writing and speaking a lot and joins us and on the call, and many, many others of you are, Judy Carman, of course, are doing so many things, and all of you are inspirations for Madeline and for me, and we really appreciate the efforts that you're making, and know that it's always important, I think, to remember that no effort, even if it seems like it was for nothing, it's never lost in the cosmic unfolding of effects. You know, the ancient Buddhist metaphor of Indra's web, which is that every dharma, every event, is connected to every other event. So even if you share something with someone and it doesn't look like anything came out of it, as Patricia said, don't worry, you know, about the effects of our action, the fruits. I mean, just do the best we can, and our actions will bear fruit in due season. And the more we just live our lives authentically and share our hearts as best we can with kindness and respect, I think the more we can create a field of healing on our planet. So I wish we had a little more time to hear from others, but I know it's very late on the East Coast. It's already after 10:30. So I really want to stop here. Just a reminder, as I said, to those of you, everyone at the very beginning, next month we're going to do it 1 week earlier because we'll be in China on the third Thursday of May. So next month it'll be the second week, which is May 11th. So please put that on your calendar, and I'll send out emails about it too, reminders, May 11th at the usual time. And so go forth with our blessing. Much love to you all. We do have a lecture tour coming up in June to the Northwest, and then we're looking at probably in December, January, February, and maybe March, a cross-country lecture tour in the southern part of the United States to Florida. So if you live anywhere in that area, you know people that do, let us know. We'll be doing a lecture tour there. And otherwise, have a beautiful month until we join together again. And we'll close with, a piece called, this is the Deer Song. We have so many beautiful deer here where we live, and deer, from the Buddhist point of view, represents the consciousness of ahimsa, of harmlessness. They live their lives and celebrate their lives, and so we just connect with the deer, the beautiful beings, and send them our love and all the beings. We send our love. And again, blessings from Madeline and me. Thank you so much for all you're doing to help bring healing to our world.